Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. If you follow social media, you've seen the disparity. People noticed it almost immediately when the public protests started after George Floyd was killed. People in the streets, many of them wearing masks, but none of them social distancing. Take away even the issue of the rioting and the looting. People were saying, now, wait a minute. I still can't legally go to church with all the rest of my congregation. The numbers are limited. In some cases, the church is effectively closed. And people are taking to the streets. And they're being encouraged by the same politicians who have, some of them through executive orders, said churches can't meet. That doesn't seem fair. It looks like a double standard. Well, joining us to talk about the double standard of stay-at-home orders, Abigail Schreier. She's a graduate of Yale Law School. She's author of an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal titled Politicians Shutter Churches and Synagogues, Then Tolerate Riots, and a forthcoming book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. Abigail, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much for having me on, Todd. I really appreciate it.
Give us a few examples, if you would, of how there have been two sets of rules, one for houses of worship and another for other gatherings.
Sure. In LA County, there were no outdoor gatherings allowed of any size. In New York, they were threatened, right? There was a Jewish funeral in which Jews tried to bury their dead, and they were broken up by police. That's how Bill de Blasio treats religious people, and specifically very often Jewish people, in New York City. But we've had the same thing in California. They now allow, there's now an update to the stay-at-home order in which they are allowing, they have required a 25% cap on occupancy of our churches and synagogues, and no, and you know, all houses of worship, and no similar cap in retail or other businesses. So there's an explicit double standard.
Talk a little bit more about how Jewish gatherings were singled out in New York City.
Well, specifically, they were threatened with arrest. I mean, he only called out one community, and it was one community that he thundered in a tweet had broken his order by attempting to bury their dead, and it was the Jewish community. They were the same community that irritates him so much. Meanwhile, there had, and in New York, that, you know, contemporaneously, there were other outdoor gatherings where people went without masks and they went unmolested because they don't bother de Blasio quite as much as the Jewish community seems to.
De Blasio is quoted regarding the protests saying, quote, when you see a nation, an entire nation simultaneously grappling with an extraordinary crisis seated in 400 years of American racism, I'm sorry, that is not the same question as the understandable aggrieved store owner or devout religious person who wants to go back to services. How do you respond to that?
At least he's acknowledging the explicit double standard. I mean, what he's saying is that some constitutional rights are not as important as others, and free exercise is subordinate to the constitutional rights de Blasio considers more important.
If someone objects to these restrictions on houses of worship, what kind of reaction do they typically receive?
So we were told to use Zoom. Many people told me this when, you know, noted, you know, or Jews couldn't have Passover Seders. And we were all told to use Zoom. Now, all religious people have various, you know, kinds of religious restrictions. Orthodox Jews are not allowed to use electronic devices on most holidays and the Sabbath. So that was not an option for us. But the interesting thing was that no one had the temerity to suggest that the protesters might have likewise used Zoom.
You cited an example of your own modern Orthodox synagogue in Los Angeles closing. How has your thinking changed since it was first closed?
I think it was smart to close it in March when we had no idea sort of what the scope of this pandemic would be, and also we didn't know very much about it. It was a very, and remains a very, very strange disease. But over time, we noticed that there enormous leeway was granted to some groups and not others, right? There were massive, massive outdoor gatherings. There have even been massive indoor gatherings around this protest that have been allowed and, you know, encouraged and tolerated and whatnot. So in light of this massive double standard, you know, religious leaders at some point had a responsibility to notice, to take note and remind the state, hey, we have constitutional rights as well. Unfortunately, religious leaders have been very slow to do this, with a few notable exceptions.
So do you think that religious leaders bear some responsibility for the existence and the continuation of the double standard?
I do. I think that they really should remind the state that you know, free exercise is the first right in the First Amendment, and that we have really important things on the line. I know safety is important, life is incredibly important, but you don't not get in a car because there is some risk, and taking reasonable precautions, you know, the right to worship and practice a religion is something that, you know, our country was founded to guarantee. Religious leaders would do well to remember that.
How did the U.S. Supreme Court recently decide the issue, at least one aspect of the issue, and how do you respond to the majority's reasoning in that decision?
Well, I think in, you know, South Bay Pentecostal Church, it looks like that the majority's reasoning was essentially that, you know, the stay-at-home orders were, the California governor's order was a neutral rule that didn't single out religion specifically and therefore was okay. It passed constitutional muster in the same way that, say, fire codes do when they apply to churches as well. But there's obviously a huge disparity in who gets a hall pass and which institutions are trusted with large gatherings. And I think if you look across which groups have been trusted and which haven't, there has been discrimination against religion.
You write, if churches and synagogues had fought to reopen sooner, maybe the riots would not have happened. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look back in American history at various riots, even in the, you know, L.A. riots of 1992, churches played a huge role in sort of channeling the anger people felt. When a community suffers or individuals suffer, you know, in this case, George Floyd, and pain is felt by a community, you know, houses of worship can be places that help people channel that anger more productively. I think we could all agree that rioting was not, or I hope we can all agree, rioting is not a productive use. But the, you know, the First AME Church played a big role in channeling this and making this point in the 1992 riots that, you know, when you're going through and destroying minority communities and businesses, that doesn't help anybody. When you, you know, wreck someone's store, you're not getting justice for your community. You're just wrecking a person's livelihood. I think churches can play a big role in reminding people of that.
Why do you think that houses of worship are often kept under stricter restrictions?
Well, religion has always offered a check on state power. Churches, synagogues, houses of worship, they answer to God first and foremost, and not to the politically fashionable notions of their age. And they are uncancelable. That's why totalitarian movements have always hated churches, because they can't control their messages.
Finally, what can you tell us about your forthcoming book, Irreversible Damage?
Well, actually, it's funny, J.K. Rowling just had a huge blog post about it today, the issue that I deal with in my book. My book, Irreversible Damage, is about the peer contagion of transgender identification among teenage girls. Teenage girls in numbers we've never before seen, suddenly deciding they have gender dysphoria, often in friend groups. This is truly unprecedented in the nearly 100-year history of gender dysphoria. And it is, you know, a contemporary peer contagion. And that's what I wrote the book about. And I look forward to talking to you about it more.
Abigail Schreier is a graduate of Yale Law School, author of an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal titled Politicians Shutter Churches and Synagogues, Then Tolerate Riots, and her forthcoming book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. You can purchase this book and read Abigail's column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Abigail, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll talk about the Council of Nicaea, a very important church council held in 325 AD. Our guest will be Dr. Joel Olowski of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.